Well, you know, we're here to talk about a subject that no woman anywhere is interested in. You know, it's funny, when we start talking about what we're going to be talking about tonight, which is largely the subject of this book, which is what I wrote almost 2 years ago. It's called For Women Only, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. And I realized when we start talking about the inner lives of men and what is going on in the life of the men around us, it's largely the stuff that I realized, it's largely stuff that we women just tend not to get. It's largely stuff, the things we're going to be talking about just tonight are things that tend to be a surprise, and it tends to be areas that we just don't understand, and the men in our life really wish we understood, but don't necessarily know how to articulate. That tends to be what I've discovered as I've gone along this. Whoo, did I just get really loud all of a sudden? Are we okay? Okay. And I realized in order to come to this discussion of what's going on in the life of the men around us, I realized we women have to confront an assumption, a cultural assumption, and I'm really not sure where this idea came from, but we have to deal with it head on first and do some business first before we can get into the subject. And it's this assumption. It's that we women, we're the one who are good at relationships. And we sort of think, we women, we're really the ones with the interpersonal skills, right? So we sort of think, you know, if there's a problem, you know what that means. It's his fault. And we think he just has to learn to relate better. And you know what we're actually saying when we kind of say that to ourselves? What we're actually saying is he has to learn to relate the way I do. And what I realized as I started doing all this research into how men are wired, and I'll explain how I got there in a minute, but as I started doing all this research, I realized the way that God has wired men to relate is totally legitimate. It's just often totally different. And so we have to confront this idea head on. And I realized that we come to this discussion with all these assumptions that we have to be willing to sort of put aside. Because I can almost promise you, if you women are like anything like me and my girlfriends, I can almost promise you that some, at least some of what you're going to be hearing tonight is going to be a surprise. It's going to go against years of assumptions that you may have about how men are wired. And it may even go against years of habits that you've developed in relating to the men in your life. And I should say, by the way, right up front, this is not just for women who are married. This is not just about marriage. I mean, there's probably many women in here who aren't married, but who are dating. And actually, how many of you have sons? Okay? It applies to the small ones, too. It applies to the men that we work with. There's so many things we need to understand about men. But I will say right up front, just as an apology, because I'm married and because the most intense application of this tends to be marriage, I slip into the language of marriage a lot. So for those of you who are single, I know when I was single, that used to drive me nuts. So for those of you who are single, please have grace with me if I slip into that language pretty frequently. But it really does apply across the board. So let's talk about confronting that assumption. And those assumptions that we have, that what we're going to be hearing might be going against. So here's a question that I have for you ladies. Okay, you ready for this? Are you willing, I have to ask you, if you're willing to do something. Two things, actually. Are you willing tonight to be totally and completely one-sided? Are you willing, as we think through this, and as you listen, are you willing to to set aside your preconceived notions and to say, yeah, you know what? There are things that I need him to understand about me too. There are those things that I wish that the man in my life understood about me. But just for now, just for this talk, this is not about those things. It's just us being very one-sided, doing some work to understand the man in our life so that we can support him better and have a better relationship. So that's the first question. Are we willing to be one-sided? The second question is really where the rubber meets the road. And it's this. Are you willing tonight, no matter where you are in sort of a faith, spiritual journey, there may be people in here who really aren't sure where they stand in a faith sense or spiritually, but I want to ask you a question. Are you willing tonight, no matter where you are, to give God permission to open your eyes and to maybe even change your mind if there are areas that you have these wrong assumptions and that you've maybe been operating on years of wrong assumptions and incorrect information? Are you willing to give God permission tonight to change your mind if there's areas that need to be changed? Are you willing to do that tonight? Are you willing to do that tonight? Okay. I have found, ladies, that it is so critical for us to give God officially permission to say, change my mind. Because that is, he's a gentleman. He's not going to come in and change it for you. You have to give him permission. And I will warn you, by the way, that he will take you up on it. I mean, it is really funny doing what I'm doing now and talking to all these groups of women. There's pretty frequently I'll do a convention or something where there's one session after another and I do the same talk for different groups of women, and a woman will come in the afternoon who was in the morning session, and she'll sort of walk up to my book table with this shell-shocked look on her face and say, I never should have given God permission. Because God is already totally changing her mind and opening her eyes to things she didn't even know needed to be opened. Okay, so let me tell you how I got here. Because I do, like I said, I do a lot of talks to women, but I also, one of the things that's really fun is that sometimes a pastor will invite me in on a Sunday morning and they will interview me on stage as the sermon time. And it's to a co-ed event. And, you know, the first pastor that did this, I was like, that's kind of interesting. He said, you know what? It'll give men and women a common language to talk about this, which is so key. But the first question that I get from a male pastor when he does this interview is almost always, and how do you know? Okay, you're a chick. How can you be up here talking about the inner lives of men? And here's really the answer. I truly just stumbled across this. It really started with the research for my last novel. One of my main characters was a guy. He was a good, decent, Christian husband and father. And as a woman, you really realize how little you understand about how men think when you have to write their thoughts. I realized I couldn't just say what this character was doing, right? I had to actually say what he was thinking in all these really personal situations. And I realized I had no idea what a guy would be thinking. And so I started originally, just started to interview a bunch of guys. And anytime my husband and I would go out to dinner with another couple, I'd go to the guy and I'd say, can I interview you? And I'd say, okay, here's my scene. What would you be thinking in the situation? And I'd get out my little pen and I'd start writing. And often as the guy started telling me what he'd really be thinking in the situation, my jaw is dropping open. And usually his wife's jaw is dropping open. And we're kind of going, that's what you're thinking? Really? And I thought, okay, wait a second, I've got to do more of this. So I did more and more and more of these interviews, and pretty soon I'm going up to the guys behind the counter at Starbucks and saying, what would you be thinking in this situation? I mean, honestly, it got kind of bad. I mean, the men in my neighborhood, if they saw me coming, they'd run. And heaven help the poor guy who was stuck next to me on the plane for 2 hours, you know? I mean, I interviewed as many guys as I could get my hands on. And it was really interesting. I realized that it didn't seem to matter what I was hearing. There were these fundamental surprises. I'd been married almost 10 years at that point. And it was one of these, I can't believe I didn't know this before. And so I realized it couldn't stop with creating this character in a novel, that I really did have to put it in a book. But there was one problem, and that's that I knew that women wouldn't believe me about what I was finding, honestly, because it was stuff that was so surprising. So, you know, I have this analytical background, so I put on my analyst hat, I couldn't help it, and I hired a professional survey company to do a big national survey of men all over the country. And at the end of that survey, everything I'd been finding in all those interviews was borne out. I hadn't just interviewed the 100 weirdest men on the planet. So that is what I put into this book. And by the way, just so you all know, I've had 2 years almost of women saying, and when is our version coming out? Okay, so ladies, 2 weeks ago. Okay? We have to be two-sided sometimes. We were very excited about that one. Had to do both sides of the story. So here's what we're going to be talking about. The book covers, and what I sort of stumbled across as I did all this research, is seven things. There are seven different things that I broke it down to. Seven different, what I call revelations, that we just tend not to get about men. And it's, like I said, largely things that they really wish we knew. So I'm going to go through probably four of them. I wish I could go through all of them, but I tend to run out of time. And if I can, I'll cover a bit more. But definitely start with this one. And I always tell women, if with this first subject, if you can only remember one thing, if you only can retain one thing or remember or go talk about it with your husband or boyfriend, this one subject, let it be this one, because it is so fundamental to how men are wired. And it's this. It's the difference between the primary need of a man in a relationship versus a woman in a relationship. We women, we most want to feel loved. That's what lights us up. That's kind of, we think that's the whole point of the thing, is feeling loved. And it's an enormous surprise for most of us women to find out that if they had to, our husband or our boyfriend would give up feeling that we loved him if he could just feel that we respected him and trusted him. And I'm seeing a lot of blank faces, so I'm going to say that again. And this is a big deal difference, so that it's hard to take this in, but let me say it again. Statistically, 3/4 of the men answered it this way, and most of the men said it was very important to them, even if they wouldn't make this explicit choice. But if they had to, most men, the vast majority, said that if they had to, they would give up feeling that their wife or their girlfriend loved them. If he could just feel that she respected them and trusted them and believed in them and admired them. And all of those things are more important to the average guy than feeling that you love him. That's a big difference between us as men and women. Now, obviously, we both need love and we both need respect, obviously. But most women make the reverse choice. If I have to, I'll give up feeling respected if I can just feel loved. Now, it's interesting. We have to confront something head on as we talk about this issue of what men most need in their romantic relationship is to feel respected and trusted. That's what lights them up. That's the whole point of the thing for them. We have to confront something head on that is another cultural assumption that is because we have such a love-dominated culture. You know, the Beatles, All You Need Is Love? Okay? And we have this assumption that goes something like this, and it says, where love is to be unconditional, respect has to be earned. How many of us would have agreed with that? I would have. Love is to be unconditional, but respect must be earned. I think probably most of us would agree with that notion. There's a couple of big problems with that, and I had never even seen them before. If you think, for those of us who come from a sort of a biblical worldview, if you look what the Bible says about it, who thinks that maybe the Bible has something to say about this, in marriage, first of all, it's a totally unbiblical idea. Some of you may be familiar, there's a passage in a letter that Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus, and in that letter, there's this long passage on marriage. It's in Ephesians 5. Some of you may be familiar with it. And over and over and over again, God says to husbands, love your wives, right? Love your wives like Christ loved the church. Love your wives. What does he say to us wives? Respect your husbands. Respect your husbands. Over and over again. I had never noticed. Had you ever noticed this in that whole long passage on marriage? Never once does God say, wives, love your husbands. Never once. God knows we'll do that naturally. We're good at showing love. We don't have to be told. But that's not what a man most needs. And so we have to be told, demonstrate this respect to him, whether or not he's earned it that day. In fact, reason number two, yeah, I hear this, huh? Reason number two, if the first reason is the biblical one, the biblical injunction for husbands to love their wives and wives to respect their husbands, whether or not either of them have earned it that day. The second reason, on a more practical level, if it's true that what your man most needs is to feel respected, if that's the thing that is the most at his core of his being, if you only show him respect when he's earned it that day, it would be as devastating to him as it would be to you if he only loved you when you were lovable. Now, let me put it this way. I'm sure I'm the only woman in here who's ever been a shrew. Okay. But in those hypothetical occasions, maybe where some of us haven't been particularly lovable that day. Okay, I'll say me. Okay, me. In my occasion, when I haven't been particularly lovable, if maybe I've been a little cranky or a little crabby, whatever it is, and my husband, his name is Jeff, if my husband chooses to extend grace and mercy and love on me anyway, what does that do to me? It softens my heart, doesn't it? It convicts me. It makes me want to be lovable, doesn't it? It makes me want to be the person he's already treating me as. You know what? It's the same thing for our men. Let's just say, by sake of argument, let's just say that there's a decision to be made that has to be made today. Maybe there was a decision that was made yesterday and it didn't go so well. Maybe actually it went pretty bad. And now you have a choice of what to do today. And you can either say that, and it's a decision that he made, and you can either say, well, you know, honey, excuse me, clearly you didn't do so good at that, so I will just take that out of your hands. Thank you very much. Been there, okay? Or you can say, that's okay, honey, I trust you. Go ahead. What does that do to him? Same thing it does to us. It softens his heart. It convicts him. It makes him want to aim for that mark. It makes him want to be the man we are already treating him as. In fact, what I heard from the guys over and over and over again as I interviewed them about this was that they felt there was something in them where they felt that they couldn't really become that strong, godly, loving, trustworthy man without that sense that their wife absolutely did and would choose to trust them. Now, here's the thing for me, I think. If you all in this room are like anything like most of the women that I talk to, I think the vast majority of you in here, you probably generally do trust or respect the primary man in your life. You probably do. And you have no idea that all day long, every day, you are doing things that convey the opposite message. Because we are just not wired the same way. So what I realized is that we need lots and lots and lots of examples. And I only have time to give a couple. But we need examples so that we can sort of see things through his eyes and see how he might take something that we weren't intending that way at all. So let me give you an example. This is a silly, silly little example, but it's a real microcosm of this, okay? Because I think every woman has been in the situation where our husband or our boyfriend is driving in circles and refusing to stop and ask for directions. Okay, you know the old joke, why did Moses wander in the desert 40 years? Because he wouldn't stop and ask for directions. Okay. So here's the thing that the guys all told me about this, which really opened my eyes. I'd never seen it this way before. They said, when their wife or their girlfriend sits in the passenger seat and says, honey, please just stop and ask for directions, what the guy is accurately hearing is, I don't trust you. And if you think about it, that's actually what we're saying. What we are accurately saying is, I don't trust you to find your way, so let's stop and ask some other man for directions. Okay, you can see how this would be a little bit of an issue. And it also points out something that is so foreign to us, but it points out, how do you do this? What does it look like? How do you convey to a man? How do you trust him, even if you don't think he's earned it that day? Even if you are a little concerned that he's driving in circles and choosing and not wanting to stop and ask for directions, how do you do this? You know what this example points out? It's just a choice. Just like his choice to love you, even if you're not particularly lovable that day. It's just a choice. Are you going to choose to trust him or not? All it is. And it is so fascinating, really, when you talk to guys, test this out, you know, on the men in your life, your male friends and colleagues and husband and boyfriend, test this out, see what they say. It is so fascinating to hear their examples, to hear the things that rise to their heads when you start talking about this. Because what it comes down to is they view this little choice. I mean, it's a silly thing, okay? We think it shouldn't bother them, you know? But we're not wired the same way. And so this little choice for the guys says something that has these big implications. One guy put it perfectly. I heard the same thing from so many guys where he said, you know what? If she doesn't trust me in something as simple as finding my way along a road, how is she ever going to trust me in something big, like whether I'll be a good husband or a good father or a good provider? And I listen to that and I think, I just didn't want to be late to the party. I'm not making some big statement. You know, we women, we're just efficiency experts. You know, quickest way from point A to B, point chop, you know? That's all we're doing. I'm not making some big statement about your capacity to be a good husband. But that's what the guy is hearing. And we might think, you know what? That shouldn't bother him. But again, because we're not wired the same way, let me ask you this. Are there things you want him to be particularly sensitive to about you? Do you want him to tease you in public about gaining 10 pounds? There are things that really matter to you that he may be thinking, it shouldn't bother her. But it does, because it touches on something real deep in our core. And it's the same thing for our guys. Feeling respected is their highest need. And when we don't understand that, we can inadvertently trip over it and make them feel in a way that none of us want to make our man feel. You know, one of the things that is so sad sometimes that I get just, you would not believe the number of emails that I get. And one of the things that is the hardest for me to see, but I see it all the time, is when I get an email from a woman who says, I got a divorce 5 years ago and now I know why. Because there are just so many things that we just didn't see about what we were doing to rip down the man in our life, and we just didn't even know it. So there's your example, because that helps us see these things through his eyes. Let me give you also a little learning tool that is really helpful, because I think we have all these habits built up. I think we need a little bit of help in order to, how do you change this, okay? So here's an example. Let me actually ask all of you ladies a question. If you're in the middle of an emotional conflict with your husband or your boyfriend, you're in the middle of something where your feelings have been hurt, how many of you ladies think that it's okay for you to cry? I do. I think it's fine for us to cry. How many of you all think that it's okay if your man gets really angry? Ooh, we got a problem with that. He ain't controlling himself. Okay? That's what I think, anyway. Well, you know what, ladies? Here's what I learned as I started doing all this research. Crying is a woman's response to feeling unloved. Anger is a man's response to feeling disrespected. So the next time my husband and I were in the middle of a discussion and he just shut down and walked away, used to be I would follow him around the house going, what'd I do? What'd I do? What'd I do? It's pathetic, I know. But I guess I'm not the only pathetic one. But suddenly, once I learned this, I knew what I did. I mean, I didn't know exactly what I did, but I had just done something he was angry. I had just done something that made him feel that I didn't trust him, I didn't respect him. I could think back, figure out what it was, and not do it again. Now, I have to say, ladies, I think that the reason that God had a woman write this book is that I can say with all honesty, I'm right in there with you, sisters. I still trip over this all the time. I still get this wrong. It takes years to unlearn years of habits sometimes. And at the risk of humiliating myself, let me give you a relatively recent example. You know, I travel a lot, like I said, and I was coming back from a trip not that long ago, and my husband, normally I just take the subway back. And instead, Jeff said, you know, I'll come down and pick you up at the airport. Just load the kids in the car and come on down and get you. And it was just so sweet of him. And we were just having a great time catching up as we were driving home on the highway, you know, chattering away. And then all of a sudden, in front of us, all I see is red brake lights. Traffic jam, right? And I start telling him what lane to be in. Here! No, go there! No, go around there! And he just shut down. And I went, I was just on stage talking about this 5 hours ago. So, I mean it when I say that this takes some time to get over these things and some time to practice new ways of relating. But you know what I will tell you, ladies? It is worth every bit of effort that you put into it. because you will see these changes. If you are in a primary romantic relationship right now, you will see these changes where he just lights up in a way that you never knew could be so direct. And so let me tell you what is the best thing is that most lights up a guy to hear, okay? Because I learned pretty quickly, it just didn't do it for me to coo to my husband, "Oh, honey, I respect you so much." I tried that. And after a while, he kind of did one of these timeouts. "It's just not working, honey, you know." And he was sort of like, you know, it's a matter of actually doing it, not saying it. But there is something that you can say that lights a guy up. And it's this: "Honey, I'm so proud of you." You know, in one of these pastoral interviews, I had one pastor say something that just took my breath away, where he said in front of his congregation, he said, "I could go, if I had to, I could go the rest of my life without hearing my wife say, 'I love you.' If I had to, I could do that. There is no way I could go the rest of my life without hearing that she is proud of me." It's powerful. It's a powerful key to unlock a man's heart. So, I could talk about that all night, but let's move on. Let's move on to another subject. The second subject is one that deals with how different men feel on the outside, feel on the inside from how they look on the outside. Okay, we all know our men look so confident in themselves, you know, and we think, you know what? He may look a little too confident in himself and need to be taken down a peg or two. Okay? And instead, what I heard over and over again about how men are feeling inside all day long, they're going through their life with this feeling: "I'm really not sure I know exactly what I'm doing, and I hope nobody finds out." No matter how confident they look on the outside. And you know, it was so funny when I started talking to guys about the fact that, you know, we women might have this need to take them down a peg or two. This one guy said something. He said, "No way. The male ego is the most fragile thing on the planet. And what's happening when you're taking him down a peg or two, he's not starting with some inflated view of himself and you're bringing him down to ground level. That's what we might think. Instead, secretly, he's starting below ground level. And when you bring him down, he's digging a tunnel somewhere." And I thought, as I heard that, I thought, wait a second. If this is true, what an incredible opportunity for me as a wife to do everything I can and look for every opportunity to build my man up. If it's true that he secretly doubts that he knows what he's doing. Now, here's the thing to me that was the most fascinating iteration of this, is that we might think, you know, that he secretly has this insecurity. Okay, maybe I can see that he secretly has this vulnerability or insecurity. But, you know, it's probably mostly an issue at work. That might be what we think. You know, it's probably mostly an issue where he's doing things that are maybe new and unfamiliar. And yes, it is an issue at work. But the stuff that I heard from guys is that it's actually worse at home. As one guy put it, he said, "At least at work, I've got some idea whether I'm doing a good job. You know, the boss is giving me raises or promotions, or I'm bringing in the clients. How do I know whether I'm doing a good job as a husband or as a father? The only measurement I have," this guy said, "is the happiness of my wife." So you can see how a guy who secretly got this insecurity that he doesn't know what he's doing, You can see how he would take it when he comes in, maybe he's worked really late again, and he comes in the door, and his wife greets him at the door with what I've done far too many times, with a sort of a critical, "Honey, why did you work so late again? Don't you care about me and the kids?" And all it does to the guy is confirm the feeling that he already had, that I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. And I realized, you know what? We women, we really need, we as women need affirmation too, don't we? We really need appreciation. We need to know that our man appreciates us or our boss appreciates us or whatever it is. We need to know that. Why should it surprise us that our man needs the exact same thing? But it's because they don't look like it that we fall into the trap of not showing them and not telling them. You know, it's funny. When I do, as I was doing, you know, all of these interviews, I heard the same analogy over and over and over and over and over independently from different guys all over the country. So let me share it with you because about this issue, it kept coming up. And this one guy said, you know what it's like? It's like I go out into the boxing ring every day and I do my best to duke it out and it's just black all around me and the lights are shining on me and it's real lonely. So when I come home, I want someone who I know is totally in my corner, who's going to rub my shoulders and pour water over my head and tell me, "You're doing a great job," and send me back out into the ring with confidence. I had so many guys say, "Here's what it is. Here's this woman, this person who knows me better than anybody else in the world. I may be secretly doubting whether I know anything, but if she believes that I can do it, I know I can. But if I get the same sense from her that she doesn't have that confidence in me, that she's not totally behind me, then it just confirms the secret doubts that I had about myself, and I probably can't." You know, it's funny. One of the things that I get to do sometimes is I overhear some really funny conversations sometimes. And not that long ago, I was in Charlotte, and we were doing a marriage retreat kind of dinner, where there were both husbands and wives there, and after the event had broken up, and we were in the chattering and coffee stage, you know, there were two guys still sitting down at one of their tables talking, and they clearly didn't know that I was standing right behind them. You hear some interesting things when that happens. And one of the guys leaned over and said to the other guy, "Kind of freaky how she knew about the boxing ring." Great. I wish you could be a fly on the wall. It's so fun to do this. So if we needed examples and we needed learning tools on the respect issue, we also need it on this issue of their sort of secret vulnerability and their secret insecurity. So here's one that a guy gave me that is a helpful tool to sort of catch yourself, that we can do and say things that kind of trigger this without us knowing it. And this one guy put it this way. He said, "Okay, tell the women, here's a rule. Anytime a woman starts a sentence with, 'Why did you dot, dot, dot? Why did you make that decision? Why did you do that particular thing?'" He said, "In a man's mind, just add on the end of that sentence a comma, 'You dodo.'" That is not what we're saying, but they're hearing, "Why did you make that decision, you dodo?" Because they're all because they're already secretly questioning whether they know what they're doing. So that's another thing that I realized I needed to catch myself. And here's the deal. It's not about always what we say. It's how we say it. Because there's plenty of times in a relationship that you have to be able to raise issues. You have to be able to ask questions. You have to be able to talk about these things. But the issue that I think many of us women don't realize is it's not about holding our tongue and being the little woman. It's about how we approach them and not stumbling over those areas that are so sensitive in their hearts. And so here's an example, by the way, of how this might look. I stumbled over this when I was actually formatting the survey. I had hired a survey designer in order to help me do this, because scientific surveys, man, they're a real science. I mean, it is really difficult to do it right. So I'd hired this survey designer who happened to be a guy, thank goodness, because he helped me catch a lot of things I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And this one subject on the survey and in the book is talking about how guys want romance just as much as their wives do, believe it or not. And the survey question was something like, the way I had originally written it was something like, do you know how to put together a romantic event your wife or your girlfriend would enjoy? Okay? That's what I asked. I thought it was a totally neutral question. And Chuck said, no, you can't ask that. And I said, why not? And he said, well, you're starting off in attack mode. Huh? Remember, the question was, do you know how to put together a romantic event your wife or your girlfriend would enjoy? And I said, huh? And he said, you can't say that. You're suggesting the man is inept. Huh? I said, Chuck, you're going to have to help me here because I have no idea what to do. He said, just soften it a bit. Put it in a context that's just not so blatant. So here's the final question. You don't want to know what it was that was deemed totally adequate? Okay. Suppose you had to put together an anniversary event for your wife. Do you know how to put together a romantic event she would enjoy? Same question, same exact words, as a matter of fact, just softened in the way that we approach it. And it is so interesting to see how well guys respond when we take the time and the effort to learn their needs and respond in the way that they need rather than just expecting them to respond in the way that we need. It's really interesting. Okay, I need to move on. The next subject is one that whenever I'm doing a co-ed event and I'm doing a book signing like I'll be doing later tonight, and I do a co-ed event, there's always some guy who's grabbed the book off the book table and he's off in a corner doing one of these. And I look up and I say, you're looking at the sex chapter, aren't you? And you know what? They always are. When we were writing for men only, chapter 6 is the sex chapter, and originally the first sentence of chapter 6 was, welcome to the book. So far, I think I have about a 9 for 10 when I ask guys, what chapter did you read first in the book? And they all get this blush on their face. I'm like, all right. So let's talk about that subject for a minute. Okay, if the book is only about things that we tend not to get, it is no surprise to any wife on the planet that our husbands want more sex. That is not the surprise. Here's what was the surprise. I realized we women have a total misunderstanding about what it means to men. Because we women think of physical intimacy in marriage for our husband as being primarily a physical need. That's sort of the category we put it in. It's a physical need, it's a physical urge. And you know, as she said, I have two small children. When you've been pulled on by little hands all day, sleep seems like a physical need. And I tell guys sometimes that I'm sorry, but if what you're doing is comparing sex to sleep, sometimes sleep is going to win. But here's what happened. As I went around the country asking the guys about what is the importance of this in your life, because all my girlfriends were asking them, ask what the importance of this is in their life. What I heard from the guys had nothing to do with the physical. Nothing. It was entirely this enormous emotional need that they couldn't get met any other way. And here's what the need is. It's the need that every man has to feel that his wife desires him and that she wants him. And if a guy feels that his wife desires him, it gives that man a sense of confidence and a sense of well-being in the rest of his life. And conversely, if he doesn't feel desired, if he feels like it's a little too easy for her to say no, it gives that man a sense of, I must not be much of a man, and a dragging sense of depression and lack of well-being in the rest of his life. Now, obviously, that is not primarily a physical need at all, is it? That really is this huge emotional need that he can't get met any other way. Now, here's the thing. We women, most of us, we've heard this before. We've heard that this is important to men. And it's important to us, too. I mean, this is a really important part of marriage. It's just that we're wired differently. And so we've heard this before. And so some women might think, okay, I'll do my duty. None of us here, of course, would ever think of it that way. But some women, hypothetically out there, might think of it that way. But here's the thing that I heard from the guys. One guy said, I'm sorry. A man would rather go out and clip hedges in the freezing rain than make love to a wife who seemed to be responding out of duty. The first time I heard that, it was relatively early on in the research, and I went to my husband and I said, I don't get it. He's still getting sex. And Jeff said, no, you're not getting it. If she is only responding because she has to, he is being rejected by his wife. And it's the deepest form of rejection for a man because it's so tied in to the core of their being, of how they feel about everything else in the rest of their life. You know, it is interesting when you hear the same thing again, over and over and over again from different men. And I heard this same, basically the same comment from men who said, you know, I can be having a terrible time at work. I can be worried about my industry going downhill. I can be worried about losing my job. The house could be a wreck. The kids could be disobedient. But if I know my wife desires me and she affirms me in bed, I can conquer the rest of that world, no problem. And conversely, if I get the same message from her that I'm already kind of secretly insecure about out there in the world, that you don't measure up, don't touch me, that'll devastate me, this guy said, far worse than anything that could happen in my career. I realized just how powerful this issue is and how easy it is for us to assume that it is not something that impacts the core of their being in the rest of their life. One guy said, you know what, it may be hard for women to believe, but what happens the night before in the bedroom absolutely affects how I feel about myself the next day at the office. Absolutely. I realized what a gift of confidence that we can give our men. Now, I will say, according to the survey of women, about 25% of couples are flipped, where it's the woman who's in the position of really wanting more. But we just don't have time to deal with everything tonight, so we're dealing primarily with the issue of the majority. You know, this issue of how important it is to feel desired, I realize that we have to take a phrase out of our vocabulary. We have to stop thinking he just wants more sex. We need to cancel that out and never think it again. We have to instead substitute it with, he needs to feel desired by me. And what a difference it makes. You know, this explains a couple of things that have always really confused me, this issue. Have you all ever wondered, I mean, I know I have always wondered, have you women ever wondered what is the lure of pornography? Why is this such a big pull on men? Why is this reach out to them? I mean, it's a picture. And this is the answer to that question. One guy put it perfectly. He said, you know what the message of pornography is? Every one of those pictures has one message, just one. It's a sensual woman looking out through the camera and saying to the man, I want you. You are the most desirable man in the world. I want you. And I think, it's just a picture. But it tugs on that thing in a man that wants to feel wanted. And you know, it's funny also to listen to guys. You know, we all kind of wonder, why is it? I mean, many of us probably have wondered, why is it that the Bible says to reserve sex for marriage? And some of us have said, okay, I hear that, but why? Well, this is also one of the answers to that question because of how powerful this is in the life of a man. You know, I have one friend who was talking about unfortunately, he was a bit of a wild man in his college years, and now he's a staid accountant type, you know, but in his college years, he said, you know, he was a bit of a wild guy, and he said, you know what? In my memory, the girls are lining up to go at it with me. And he said, it's not true, but because this issue of feeling desired is so key to a man, his memory is building it up, because you know what? When you get the wife and the kids and the house and the dog and the mortgage and all of the stresses of life, and that's no longer quite so frequent, your memory can be building up, well, all those women really wanted me. And that's what the guy wants to feel from his wife. It points out how powerful this is. I'm almost out of time. I want to touch on one subject that is briefly that is related to this. And this is one, I will warn you, there are a couple of subjects in the book that are a little hard for us women to hear. And I was actually really tempted to actually leave them out of the book. Seriously. But I kept hearing these things from men, and I knew from talking to them there were things that they couldn't say to their wives or felt that they weren't able to talk about it or express themselves. So I figured, you know what? I do need to address it. So here's one of them. So hold on to your seats a little bit, ladies, all right? And this subject is what it means to say that men are visual. We all know that men are visual. We've all heard that. But what does it mean? You ask the average woman, what does it mean? And you kind of get a blank stare. I don't really know what it means. Well, ladies, here's what it means. So hold on to your seats. It means two different things. The first is that even the most devoted, wonderful, godly husband can't not notice a woman who's dressed in a way that calls attention to her figure. Can't not notice. Even if he's going to honor his wife and turn away until she passes, her existence on the planet is noted. Okay? I had one husband who I trust so much, and he said, and I've heard this now from other guys, and he said, you know what? If I am in Home Depot minding my own business, and a woman with a great body walks in the door, who's dressed to show it off, a woman with a great body walks in the door, even if I'm gonna honor my wife, I'm gonna honor God, I turn away until she passes, I'm always aware she's in there somewhere. Okay? So that's the first thing that it means to say that men are visual. They can't not notice. Even if they choose not to look, which we hope that they do, They can't not notice. The second thing that it means to say that men are visual is even weirder to us women, because only about 20% of women are visual. Those of you who are in that 20%, you understand this immediately. The 80% of us need a little help. So here's what the second thing is. It means that that image of that girl, of Home Depot girl, okay, that image is burned into a man's brain and becomes part of what my husband calls a mental Rolodex. A mental Rolodex of images that stretch back to his teen years, and any of which could arise at any time in the future without warning. Now, I started hearing these things about guys talking about images popping up in their head, and eventually we were driving the car one day with my husband, and I said, I'm hearing about this pop-up stuff. What is this about? And he said, okay, you know what? I bet that we do experience reality the same way, and we're just maybe using different words to describe it or something. So let me give you an example. He said, you know that movie we saw last week with Tom Cruise? Yeah. Okay, so you think he's an attractive man, right? Yeah. Okay, the next day after we've seen one of his movies, how many times will an image of Tom Cruise with his shirt off or something just sort of rise up in your head? How many times does that happen the next day? Never. And Jeff said, no, I must not be explaining myself correctly. You know, you're just sitting at your computer, you're working on one of your columns, you're not doing anything sensual at all. And all of a sudden, a sort of a movie of Tom Cruise taking his shirt off just sort of plays across the screen of your mind. How many times does that happen the next day? Never. I enjoy him when I see him, but he doesn't come back. The difference with our guys, ladies. Home Depot girl comes back. Even if he does not want her there. Ooh. Because what a guy has to do when that image pops into his head, here's what the guys all told me they have to do. Image pops up totally involuntary, and he has to say, stop it. I don't want to be thinking about that right now. Tear it down. Don't think about that anymore. Phew. Bing, 5 minutes later, she could be back. Stop it. I don't want to be thinking about that right now. Take every thought captive out of reverence for Christ. Cars, sports, whatever, baseball scores, anything to get that image out of my head. Over and over and over again, all day long, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, for the rest of their lives, if they want to honor their wives and honor God in their thought life. Now, let me ask you this, ladies. If it's true that a man, even the most devoted husband, can't not notice a woman who is dressed in a way that calls attention to her figure, and if it's true that that image is burned into his brain and could arise at any time in the next 50 years without warning, ask yourself this question. What is this culture like for our men? One guy yelled out from a congregation once, "Hail!" And every other man in the congregation started applauding because of just how exhausting it is. And so many guys wish that they could enlist their wife in this struggle, that they could bring her alongside as a partner and say, pray for me. Now, every counselor I've talked to has said, it is not a good idea for the wife to become the police. Okay, that is not healthy. But so many guys said that they just wish they could that their wife or their girlfriend, if they were in a serious dating relationship, that they wish that she could understand that he wasn't something other than normal, and that they could enlist her to say, you know, I've actually had some guys tell me, you know, privately, where they've said things like, you know, I told my wife that I really wanted to go to this men's accountability group. You know, church. The church was, they were hosting a men's accountability group about these issues, and my wife said, what are you saying? Are you saying you're attracted to other women? What are you saying? And the guy goes, never mind. You know, forget it. And he closes off that wall, that part of his life, that he really wished that he could just enlist her side by side against the culture. Because this culture really is such a minefield for our men. And so many guys have said several things that you have to hear, okay? And they all agreed with this on the survey. Is that this has nothing to do with how they feel about their wives. It really doesn't. Every man seems to have this struggle, regardless of what a great relationship that he has with his wife. It says nothing about that. But the other thing that so many guys said, you have to understand, this one guy put it this way, he said, you have to understand, we guys, we loathe this temptation as much as our wives do. We would turn it off in a second if we could. That's really important for us to realize when we're tempted to take it personally and instead say, this makes me so much more committed to praying for my husband in this culture. Because guys also said, encouragingly, that as they practice this discipline of bouncing their eyes, as they practice the discipline of taking every thought captive, the struggle does get easier. But we need to realize we can make it so much worse just by how we dress and carry ourselves and have no idea that that is a struggle we are adding to for some godly man. And let me tell you, ladies, so many guys have said that when they're in church on Sunday, they just want to be worshiping God. And instead, in front of them, three rows up, there's a woman who's dressed in a way that calls attention to her figure in some way. And he's trying so hard. He just wants to worship God. And it's so distracting for the rest of the service because he's trying so hard, so hard, so hard not to look. Don't look. So ladies, let's take this seriously. Every single one of us, every single one of us should care about whatever it takes to not make our brothers stumble, shouldn't we? Yeah. Okay, time for me to end. But I want to, before I close, I need to tell you the last thing, the biggest surprise that to me came out of the survey. At the end of the survey, I gave the guys a blank space and I said, okay, guys, we've talked about all these subjects. What's the one most important thing that you wish your wife or your girlfriend knew, but feel you can't explain to her or tell her? What's the one most important thing? And I thought it would be a chance for the men to vent, honestly. And instead, when I got the spreadsheets back with the hundreds of responses, I almost started crying. Because the top answer, when they could say anything, remember it was a blank space, the top answer by far was the one most important thing I wish my wife knew was how much I love her. And I realized our guys really do have such goodwill towards us. And they just feel kind of handicapped at getting it across to us in a way that we'll believe them. And what a neat opportunity it is for us to say, you know what, for too long, maybe I've just expected that he needed to do all the work somehow to move in my direction. And it's a chance for me to be totally one-sided, to learn what he needs and try to support him in the way that he needs. And when you do that, it is amazing what you see. You know, let me leave you with this quote. There was one pastor of a very large church who interviewed me, did this congregational interview, and he said something amazing. He is a, like I said, he's a huge congregation. He's also very well known. He writes books and he's on TV all the time. And he stood up this Sunday morning in front of this massive room and he said, I know you all think that you have a good pastor. I know you think that. You don't. You have a great pastor's wife. And that is how our guys feel about us, ladies. We have such, have you gotten a sense tonight for how much power we have to either build our men up or tear them down? I hope you ladies will use that power well. And for those of you who are married, I will leave you with this thought. Tonight, go home and practice.